Hello and welcome back to another episode of Kadri Talks Football. Interesting weekend. A lot happened. There was a title race clash last year. I mean, it's just five games in, but we could basically say that was a title race clash because those are the top two that everyone or most people have predicted for the season. And there were other interesting clashes everywhere else. It's starting to the table is starting to take shape. Five games in, the people that are going to finish mid-table are probably in and around there already. The title contenders are already up there. The people that we expect to fight for relegation are already down there. So everything is starting to take shape now, and it's so interesting. Just before we get into the video, you know, do the usual, like, comment, subscribe, turn on the notification so that you can know when I have posted. If you do not want to watch my face, the link will be in the description for Spotify and Apple Podcast. Alrighty, let's get into the video. So, obviously, we're going to start with the big game of the season. Or, well, weekend. We don't know if that will be the big game of the season. We don't know how the season will go, but the biggest game of the weekend was City versus Arsenal. So many things to take away from that game. So many talking points. Starting from where do we start from? Let's start from the first goal. So Haaland scored the first goal. Haaland has been on an amazing scoring form. Like, most people thought, like, it couldn't go on for as long as it's gone on for. Like, it's not like we do not trust Haaland to score. Everyone trusts Haaland to score. It's just we thought at some point he would take a break. And so, just like me, most people took away the captain handband on FPL from Salah, from Haaland, and gave it to someone else. Most people gave it to Salah. But Haaland, you know, showed us why we shouldn't have done that. Crazy guy. Beautiful goal. The way Savinho took away Calafiori, sent him back to Milan Fashion Week. Took him out of the game. And you see, one of the most interesting things about that goal is Savinho delayed the pass. Like, he finds skill to get away, but he did not know what was around him. So he had to look up first and then look down again to check where the ball was and then make the pass. In any other situation, any other player, any other striker he was playing with, that striker would have continued running and become offside by the time the pass was made. And it's not. I'm not saying, like, the striker would not be to blame because Savinho delayed the pass. But Haaland kept on looking at Savinho. He realized that he was going to delay the pass, so he delayed his run. And then by the time Savinho made the pass, he was well onside to get the goal. And the finish, It's not a spectacular finish. It's not a finish that 10 years from now, people will be thinking, wow, that was a mad finish. Top 10 goals you have ever seen in my life. No, it finish was a striker's finish. Like, he ran to the ball. He saw the keeper picking a spot. Keeper had already covered. So usually, because of the place where he was, his favorite foot is the left foot. So every keeper would think he's going to bend his body and take it to the far corner. And so he saw the keeper do that. Take that position to try and cover the far corner. And Haaland just ran into the ball, I don't think he swung his leg. He just ran into the ball, near post, sweet goal, proper striker's goal. Like, Savinho was really good for that goal. Calafiori was suspect for that goal. Haaland was really good for that goal. Like, he got the run on Gabriel. I can't really blame him there because it's Haaland. Like, you can't really blame the defender there, but. Proper goal. Everyone is thinking, fair enough. City are going to slap Arsenal. Like, what does Arsenal have to offer? Based on what we've even seen them do this season, like, everyone was probably expecting them to defend all game anyway. But now they are 1-0 down. They can't even decide to sit back. Next thing you know, game has gone on. And another thing that I note, I don't want to say I, because this is something that everyone's been talking about. So, it looks like it was the game plan for Arsenal to take out Rodri. I know it sounds crazy. Why would you send your players out to take out one guy? But before, immediately the first whistle went, Havertz had already elbowed Rodri on the floor. Next thing you know, everyone's scuffling with Rodri until he finally gets this injury. But it could be a conspiracy. I mean, it is a conspiracy theory. Why would you send out your players to injure another player? But that's what it looks like, to be honest. And they finally got what they wanted. Game is going on. There's a lot of antics, a lot of stop starts because everyone is trying to play. I don't know. Arsenal are now like thugs when they play, which I don't think is bad. From an outside perspective, from someone that wants to enjoy football, maybe it's not that nice to watch. But to be honest, if I was an Arsenal fan, I would not be complaining because it is helping them, obviously. It is getting them the wins. If that was what it took for Liverpool to win games, I would support it live and direct. So I'm being unbiased and I'm saying, yeah, their thuggery is maybe not nice to watch, but it is effective. And that happened throughout the whole game. It helped their first goal. They got a foul. There's a lot of scuffles here and there. A referee called Kyle Walker and Saka because they were the captains in the game to discuss with them. Unfortunately, Kyle Walker was not allowed to get back in position whilst Arsenal took the free kick and then quickly got a goal from that. Beautifully taking goal from Calafiori. Like, defensively, he was looking suspect, but I'm not one to. I defend Trent all the time because people are always expecting him to do the extraordinary against world-class skillful wingers. So I'm not going to sit here and troll Calafiori for suffering the same thing. Nah, he came against a world-class, his Premier League debut, and he came against one of the best dribblers in the league, and he felt it. But his goal was beautifully taken on his left foot. Swung that ball like it's one of them balls where the keeper thinks they will get a hand on it, but the ball just keeps on curving away from them. Game is 1-1, beautiful goal. And then we see Arsenal and their so game is 1-1. I think Arsenal are back to the original plan, which is defend deep, try and score from a set piece, which is crazy it's crazy when you say it out loud because it is Arsenal. Everyone is expecting something much better from them, good gameplay and whatever, what we've seen from them in recent times. But if that is what it takes to win, then that's what it takes to win. And I'm not judging, to be honest. I want my team to be a set piece team. I want us to score from set pieces as much as they do. So, and also if it means seeing if that's what it takes for us to see out the win, and if what it takes for us to see out the win is sit back and defend, then I want my team to do it too. But anyway, it's not Liverpool we're talking about. So Arsenal get I think maybe their first set piece that I could think of in the game, and it was a routine that we've seen before. I think that was the exact same routine against Tottenham. All everyone is far post. Gabriel is in the middle, just lurking around. Saka swings it far post, but those guys far post, they don't attack the ball at all. They are just there to stop the City players from jumping. And then Gabriel hits it, runs from the middle of the box to get the ball, hits it. Unfortunately, that didn't go in. You would think, okay, this is how they want to play their set pieces today. This is what they did against Tottenham. Let's find a better way to stop them. Which I think they did because the first time it was Doku on Gabriel, and he did not do well at all. So the second time they switched it, they were like, Kyle Walker should go on Gabriel. At least he's strong, he's quick, he should be able to distract him. He was doing touch me, I touch you with him. I don't know what that was for. They played the exact same corner, the exact same thing, and this time Gabriel hits it into the post. And everyone is thinking the same thing. These guys are going to become Satan. This is going to be terrorism. This is going to be what Obama died for. This is going to be what the Taliban have been doing. And to make matters worse, just before the first half ended, Trossard decides to kick the ball away again. And then you see Arsenal fans trying to complain. Like, everyone, I think everyone universally agrees that that rule is unfair. We don't like the rule. But the rule has been set in place. We have had debates and debacles over that rule because of Arsenal. So you would think going into the game, Arsenal, who are more experienced from suffering from that rule, would think, okay, let's not do that shit again. And then, well, as you know it, they did that shit again. They got a red card again, and everyone is trying to cry online, saying, "Oh, the Premier League against us. I mean, Michael Oliver is a shit referee. I don't rate him at all. The worst referee in the league. But that was not one of the many wrong calls he made. They go into the first half with 10 men, 2-1 up. I don't think anyone expected them to come out even. Like, if left Arteta, he would have brought out 10 centre-backs. Came into the game. They put 9 people in the box. And City... It's easy to say City were poor. But it's hard. It is hard to break those people down. Not even those people. Not even Arsenal. It's hard to break 10 people down. Like, it was a straight line. And it wasn't just a straight line. It was 5 people. 5 centre-backs. Timber... Saliba, he brought on White and then Gabriel and then Calafiori. Like 5 centre-backs, 5 lines. So if full-backs are not the greatest defenders, like you can easily beat them. But centre-backs, that is their life. Their life is to defend. And you put 5 centre-backs on one straight line. Come on, that would be the hardest thing to beat. And then on top of that, they had Partey and Rice in front of them. Two of the best DMs in the league. So I couldn't really blame them. The only problem is maybe I probably would have made some changes. Like, their centre backs were the ones getting on the ball most of the time. Like Ruben Dias, what's the other guy's name? Akanji. They were, because they kept passing on that one line. I would have probably put the centre backs in the box so that at least when I cross, I have more aerial threat, and I would have put my midfielders on that line so that they're the ones holding goal. Because first of all, the midfielders are better at shooting, the midfielders are better at passing and whatever. But we just kept on seeing the same passage of play from Bernardo Silva to Diaz to Akanji to Vardiol back again, and then like there was no spark. And then you bet Arsenal are trying to waste time. Every 2 minutes, somebody is going down with a cramp. Once Raya makes a save, he's going down with the ball. You're thinking, well, this is the end. I just couldn't see a way. I couldn't see a way for City. Nothing they were doing was bringing out any spark. 97th minute, they get a lucky break. For the first time, someone drives into the box and then forces a play. So Jack Grealish drives into the box, forces a play. Lots of deflections, ball lands on John Stones' feet, goal 2-2. Crazy game. I mean, I actually enjoyed the game. It's one of the best games I've seen, because tactically, first of all, from a tactical point of view, that was great. Great football, tenacity, physicality, that was brilliant. And then the desperateness, that's probably what made it even more interesting. Like, just you could see City just needed to get that goal. Usually, City will not celebrate a draw, but they celebrated that very much. And then at the end of the game, people were fighting. Haaland, you know, shithousery that is only applied to certain people. But if it was other people, they would use it as a reason to be racist to you. But it was interesting. I think real hate is back in football, which we love to see. Arsenal are not making any friends. That's all I would say. I don't think any team will look at them and say and want to, because every team will now look at them and think, oh, this is what they want to do. They want to bully our keeper, they want to crowd our box anytime they take set pieces. So there's going to be lots of fights when Arsenal are trying to take set pieces now, which is going to make it even more interesting. I think they are going to make the season harder for themselves. But like I say, brilliant. They are still unbeaten in the league. They are still in close touch with the league leader. Like, as much as I hate Arteta and his antics and how his team plays football now, the Tuggery and everything, I respect it. I respect it. And if it was my team, I would not be complaining. So, there we go, guys. Arsenal versus City. Game ended 2-2. Good points for both of them. They didn't lose. The both of them are still unbeaten. 2 of 4 teams are still unbeaten in the league. And they're still there. 5 games in, obviously. There is nothing has been played yet. 33 games to go. So this game will only... You only realize how important this game was in May. For now, it is like there's still a lot to play for. So what's the point? There's no point in dwelling on it. All the both teams can just come out with their heads held up high. Saying, you know, we didn't lose regardless of how the game went. But yeah, until the next game I saw, Liverpool Bournemouth. After disappointment of the previous weekend, Liverpool decided to change things up. It wasn't one of our best games. Since the season started, this is probably one of them games where I wouldn't have been upset if we lost or if we drew. Okay, well, no, that's quite an overreaction. We obviously deserved to win. We were still better at the end. It's just Bournemouth were really good. Like, they've just been really good this season, and they probably deserved a goal at least. They played really well, really well. If the scoreline is flattering to us. Okay, maybe not flattering because we did deserve to score a lot more even. Like, there were so many chances we missed. But the gap between, like, the gameplay, the in-game play was closer than the scoreline suggests. Bournemouth really played well, but Liverpool were able to shut them out. They started the game with a quick goal, Semenyo, but it was offside. And I think that, like, woke Liverpool up thinking, okay, if we don't step up, this is going to be another Forest game. And like I said previously, our weakness is obvious. Teams that sit deep, teams that are physical with us. And that's something Bournemouth did not do. They did not sit deep. They were pressing us, and we beat their presses with our brilliant midfielders. Oh God, Gravenberch. That guy is a changed man. Whatever he's done to change his life around, I need that going into next year because my life needs to change. And then McAllister, who was the best player on the pitch, like, that guy is just, people were talking about phase one or phase two without him. Like, you hear stupid things from stupid people. That guy's our best midfielder on every level. And it even showed when we took off Szoboszlai and McAllister became our 10. And you could see the creativity we lack when Szoboszlai plays. That guy, he needs to go and model or something. Physically, pressing wise, defensively, he's brilliant. Like, he's up there. Probably, you could make a case that he's our best when it comes to those things. But creatively, on the ball, what we need to end up winning, because we can't win games by winning balls. No, that is one part. The main part that wins the games is putting the ball in the net, which Szoboszlai does not help us do. He can shoot here, but he doesn't even shoot enough. I don't even want him to be shooting, to be honest. I hate when people spam shots in games, and but the final passes, he just doesn't have it in his locker. And then Salah had a brilliant game. People are trying to say because when you watch Salah, it gets to a point where he's seen that 3-0 of everyone has scored. I need my own goal too. Yeah, that's probably one of the most annoying players you get to watch. Well, overall gameplay was good. Like, he got his dribbles on point. Like, he started doing this thing he used to do before where he doesn't just. So recently he's been cutting just onto his left and he's become too predictable. So now he's going left and right, what we knew him for, and he's making it, made it hard for the defenders to defend him. And then Diaz, brilliant player. Like, he's that's another person that his life has changed. Like, I don't know what slot he's feeding these guys, but I'm glad he's feeding them whatever he's feeding them. Two brilliant goals again. Second highest goal scorer only behind Haaland. That golden boot race is, I'm just joking. There's no golden boot race. But it's nice. It's nice to see him get goals. People weren't wanted him out. They wanted him to be replaced with Gordon. And I kept on fighting for him, defending him. Not that I think Diaz is the most brilliant player in the world. But come on, if you're going to replace Diaz, it shouldn't be with that Albino in Newcastle. Like, show some respect to my Colombian magician. And, he shut people up. The craziest thing about Diaz is if he does drop in form, we have Gakpo, who is also playing really well. Who else can I shout out to? Kelleher also had a brilliant game. He's not happy in Liverpool anymore. He doesn't want to be second choice. But unfortunately, you cannot. There's no one in this world right now that would bench Alisson. So, fortunately, he might have to leave to get first team football. But when he's been called upon, he's always performed really well. Konate, brilliant game. Trent, brilliant game. From Bournemouth side, I really liked everyone. Semenyo did not really have an impact on the game, but Kluivert played really well. Van Nistelrooy is a very strong striker. At the start of the game, I was thinking, man, this guy has got it. Like, he's gotten the play over Konate because it looked like Konate was struggling with him, but then Konate found his feet and shut him out. Bournemouth are a really good team. I know they're going to do really well this season. But otherwise, good win for Liverpool, 3 points. only just behind City now. But like I said, five games in, there's nothing really much to be excited about. There's still a lot to play for, but it's good to get your wins in the bag. Like, we've conceded only one goal this season, and that one goal led to a loss. It's quite unlucky, because there are teams that have conceded a lot, but they haven't lost any game. So, it's quite unlucky to look at, but good. It's still good going forward. Just keep up the momentum, man. Keep up this energy. Keep up this pace. Hopefully, not too many injuries, and Liverpool should be up there at the end. I'm not expecting them to be in the title race, to be honest. I'm just going to be humble this season. It's going to be between Arsenal and City, but I do think Liverpool should be good enough to finish third. The other game I watched, first game I watched this weekend actually, was West Ham versus Chelsea. Chelsea are finding their feet. Much better under Enzo than they were under Poch and the other guy, Potter. Not that I think they're even... Like, Enzo is a good manager, but I think Poch and Potter too were good managers. But they were unlucky that they got a team that had not gelled with each other. And if you look at it, with Poch, at the end of the season, they started playing really well together. They finished sixth, which no one even expected them to be in. But with Enzo has a team that has actually played together already, plus the new superstar additions. But anyway, the good thing is they've got them playing Jackson. Jackson used to be in his debate with Nunes and Højlund. I think he's obviously, clearly, by miles, won this debate. That he's the much better striker in terms of physicality, in terms of hold-up play, link-on play, and finishing. Two brilliant goals and one brilliant assist for Cole Palmer. Like, really good game from them. People were trying to take away the Sancho assist, saying Sancho doesn't deserve the assist because of the long run Jackson made. For me, the way I look at it is Sancho is the type of player that likes to link up with people around him. And that goal wouldn't have been possible if Sancho wasn't around there to link up with Jackson. Yes, Jackson did most of the work, but that's Sancho's gameplay anyway. Like, quick passing, he didn't... When immediately Jackson gave him the ball, he could have held on to the ball, he could have tried to dribble, he could have tried to do extra stuff, but he released it immediately, told Jackson, run, go and do your thing. And to me, that was a brilliant assist, no matter what people say about it. 3-0, Chelsea with another win. And it's looking good for them, you know. It's looking good for them. I think Enzo has already equaled the amount of away wins that Pochettino had the whole of last season. That is a crazy start. But it's looking good for them. We'll see how long they last. Like, they're still sus in terms of defense, like the way they are defensively. But West Ham were terrible. West Ham should have gotten the penalty though. I think it was Fofana holding some of you. Like, it's unfair the way refereeing in Premier League is so bad. That should have been a penalty. Not saying that West Ham deserved anything from that game. They were absolutely terrible and deserved nothing but a loss. But they deserved a penalty. But anyway, Chelsea got the win, and that's good for them. The other game I saw this weekend was Palace versus United. I want to say a boring 0-0 draw, but it wasn't a boring game. United played really well. I have so many United fans around me. That's probably what brews my hate for them. And there's always one opinion or the other. I mean, there's the comparisons where they think their players are better than what they are when their players are shit. But I had a debate on Twitter with one of my friends about Ten Hag's setup. So I think it's obvious. Ten Hag doesn't have his game plan. He has a game plan based off who is available. I know people are thinking, well, isn't that how it should be? But no, I don't think that's how it should be. If you look at it, who is the manager I've watched the most in my lifetime that I paid the most attention to, my conscious attention to, is Klopp. Klopp had a system. Regardless of who was available, that system was what he went into every game with. There were obviously little tweaks here and there based on the opponent we are playing, you know, changing shape and whatever. But there was one system. Because Trent is not available, that did not mean we will bring a fullback that will do something else. No, the next fullback, whether it is going to be Gomez, whether it's going to be Bradley, whether it's going to be Nico Williams, he will try and replicate what Trent does. But with Ten Hag, it is Mount is available. Oh, okay, that's our best presser. Guys, let's press, let's counter press, let's press very high, let's suffocate them in their box. Mount is no longer available. Shit, we can't do that anymore. Let's try and do a possession game based football. You know, we'll let Xerxes drop in, overload the midfield. Because of Casemiro's limitations, let's, you know, do intricate plays. Oh, Xerxes is no longer available. Oh, we've taken Xerxes off in the game. Let's do something else. Just give it to Bruno. Let him spam the ball. Like, that's not how it should be. That's not how it should be. If you go into a game, if you go into Crystal Palace and you say you want to overload the midfield by making a striker drop deep, if you take Xerxes off in the game, the next person that comes in needs to do the exact same job. Not that you change the game and then, like, it does. And this guy was, and I had a long argument, and to me it made no sense because he basically agreed with me, but he was trying to give excuses. One thing about United fans, I don't know what it is they see in Ten Hag, but they really love this guy and they keep on defending him. I mean, I don't hate it. The more Ten Hag stays here, the more useless they are. And from both ends, they could have both won the game, to be honest. Garnacho hit the post. Bruno hit the post immediately after Garnacho's miss. Eze is having a funny season, to be honest. I don't think he's having a good season. He could have scored a lot of goals. Ismail Assar should have scored a goal. Onana made a great save. De Ligt actually should have scored a goal. Henderson made a great save. You know, it was... At the end of the day, it was good saves from the keepers, and the two teams were not bad. I say United were really good. Crystal Palace were also really good. They basically came with a game plan. They respected United, and they found a way to try and make a win, which they tried to. Nketiah was brilliant in the game. I think Martinez should have seen a red card. Why are you jumping? That guy, 5-3 and an attitude. Why are you jumping with your 2 feet like that? That guy is... Some people have mental problems, and he's one of them. And you will see United fans saying he's butcher, he's this, he's that, he's a... That guy, I don't see him, but he can't bully anyone in the league. He's not built for that, but he tries to act like this tough guy. But anyway, he didn't see a red, he saw a yellow for that tackle, which is just insane. And... United with another draw. United are starting to fall off, you know, from the pack, the people that we put them in and around in predictions for the season. But 5 games in, just like I said in the previous with the previous games, it's just 5 games in. They might actually find form, go on a 10-game winning streak, who knows, and then be up there. But with United, I don't see it. I can be proven wrong, yes. I'm not stubborn. I've grown out of the phase where I'm just biased and hateful. I can hate you, but still be honest. If United play well, fair enough. We would respect them for that. But 0-0, no goals, clean sheets, which is good for them. Clean sheet is always good for everyone. It gives you confidence that, okay, your defense is starting to look secure. Once we need to start finding the goals, that is the end. I think they've missed the most big chances in the league. Liverpool is second to them in terms of big chances missed. So they're doing well. They're creating really well. But I just don't see it with them yet. Just yet, I don't see it with them. Maybe we'll get there someday. This season, maybe. I think being in the Europa League is good for them. They will play against teams they can beat, and they will find their form. But yeah, let us move on to the next game. The next game I saw on TV was Brighton versus Forest. Very interesting game. Two managers that I respect a lot. Hustler, who is younger than everyone in the league. I don't know who I rated very high in my manager ranking video. If you haven't seen it, you should go check it out. People had so many opinions on that. People actually hated I ranked him so high. But I think he's proving everyone wrong. He's had bad seasons just like every other manager in the league. Everyone has had bad seasons. He's not going to be the first. He will not be the last. But how do you pick yourself back up? How do you adapt to the way the game is being played? Nuno is doing that brilliantly. He's currently 5 games into the season unbeaten, and I predicted them to go down, and he's proving me wrong. Game started, and they got a penalty. Yeah, it was a penalty. Balaba clips his leg, and Wood scored. Brilliant penalty. 1-0. I'm thinking, oh, okay, wow, Forest might actually get the win here. Next thing, Brighton attack. The Hinshaw Wood with a header, and then Welbeck with a free kick. Crazy, I know. But 2-1, I'm thinking, okay, Brighton has definitely got this. But I'm thinking the Brighton would even score more because the pressure kept on piling on for us. Like, Brighton kept on playing and playing and playing. And I'm thinking, okay, they'll probably get a third. Unfortunately, they were not able to get a third. And then Brighton and Forest from out of nowhere created this beautiful chance where they had two people on goal, running on in goal. I think it was Jota and Sosa. And then they scored 2-2. Game is on, everything is going crazy. And then the major incident from the game, Gibbs White, see, this is what I hate about the Premier League referees. Gibbs White tackles this guy, which I think is a foul, rightfully. Could it have been a yellow card? Maybe, I don't know. If he gave it as a yellow card immediately, I won't have complained because that looked kind of reckless. But it was a foul, definitely. The referee blew the ball. Everyone is going to him saying that should be a yellow. Referee says no, he got the ball. 2 minutes later, the referee is calling Gibbs White and giving him a yellow card. What happened in those 2 minutes that made you change your mind? It makes no sense. And then everyone is confused. Everyone is complaining that you just said you got the ball. Why are you giving him a red card? Everyone is like complaining and he's just dishing out red cards to all the managers because, well, I'm the referee. No one should speak on me. Speak to me anyhow. Like, I hate it so much. I hate the Premier League refereeing so much. You make a stupid decision that impacts a football team. And it's not just one game that they are losing. That one game could be the reason why they relegate or miss out on Europe, miss out on a lot of money in return. And if you dare question them, you get sent off. Like, it's unfair. And the Premier League keeps on motivating this stupid rubbish behavior. But anyway, Darica did not really impact the game because the game ended 2-2. Well, a really interesting game and one of my favorite games from the weekend. And I'll quickly go through the other games that I did not see because they weren't really on TV. Aston Villa versus Wolves. I think, yeah, Wolves got the goal first. It was from pressing Aston Villa from the front. Konya won the ball and just ran, took a brilliant shot from outside the box. Good goal, but Wolves have not really been good this season. They've not really played well. They've not defended Leeds. They've not been impressive. Well, okay, no. When you watch them, you're impressed by how they play. But results-wise, they are not doing themselves any favor with how they are playing. And Aston Villa is not one of the teams you want to play with. I think Aston Villa have 4 wins out of 5. One of 3 teams that have 4 wins this season so far. You just don't want to choke with them. As you can see, Watkins got his goal before Wolves could even get themselves together. Alcantara already got his goal, and then I don't need to mention his name. You know who came on and got his goal? Yes, John Duran, arguably up there with Haaland as the best striker in the league this season so far. One of my friends, Nate, biggest Aston Villa fan I know, he texted me out of the blue and said John Duran is the best Colombian in the league. I mean, I'll pick the guy that starts for his team and is the second highest goal scorer this season. But, you know, John Duran has a good shot. He doesn't even start for Colombia, at least not yet. But he's a really good striker anyway. And 3-1, Aston Villa, 4 wins out of 5. The only loss was to Arsenal, which they shouldn't have even lost. That is crazy. Like, Aston Villa, I predicted them to finish in top 4. People were like, they have Champions League, they will fall off. This is not Newcastle. These guys have invested. They have a second team that can compete. They have a second team. They know they are confident in how much they can shuffle their team now to play against almost any team in the world. So it's good for them. They might even, you know, I genuinely thought like it would be City, Arsenal, or Arsenal City, then Liverpool, and then there'll be a fine gap, then Aston Villa. But it's looking like it would be City, Arsenal, and Liverpool Villa. Like, it's going to be a tight race for that third and fourth spot. Because I don't think we're in the title race. I would like us to be in the title race. Maybe in February, March, I'll be like, okay, shit. Third place isn't what we're looking for. We'll be in the title race. But for now, I'm good. I'm just going to be humble. Other game I saw, I didn't see, but I'll talk about it anyway. Brentford versus Tottenham. Brentford have been starting this habit of scoring early goals, which is good, you know. You can score early, sit back, see how the game goes so that you know what to do. But unfortunately, they've not really won games every time they've scored early. scored in less than 1 minute against Tottenham. Mbeumo, beautiful goal, right? Beautiful goal. Neat volley. And then, well, Tottenham turned up. They were just, they just had to get a win. Solanke got his first goal. Brennan Johnson has gotten his second goal in two games. People are saying bullying works. You know what? That's right. I'm not one of them guys that would not criticize you when you're... I would criticize you when you're playing bad. And I've noticed something. Like, Nunes got a goal this weekend. And everyone that was saying, if you've criticized him, you shouldn't say anything. No, if you play well, I'll praise you. If you play bad, I'll criticize you. Ain't nobody got time for that. These guys are getting paid millions. I'm not here to cuddle anyone up and protect them. Play well or play well and get praise. Don't play well, and you will see the worst side of me. But anyway, Solanke got his goal. Brennan Johnson got his goal. And Maddison got his goal. I don't know. Taking off your shirt off in a game against Brentford after a very bad start to the season. I don't understand. But anyway, 3-1, 3 points. Good for them. They probably should find their feet from here. But knowing Tottenham, we can't really predict their movement. Fulham, Newcastle. Now, Newcastle, I don't get it. But, I mean, this is their first loss of the season, so can't really hate. But they've not been impressive. They've not lost. They had not lost until this weekend, yes. But they've not been impressive. They finally got in the loss, and I think this is probably what they needed to wake them up. I think, in terms of ratio, in terms of, like, where I predicted them to be at the end of the season, I think, yeah, this is the type of form they'll be in. They'll, you know, they'll get wins, and then they'll lose here and there. Fulham outplayed them based off what I saw. I didn't see Newcastle create anything. And it was just Astor's boys that were destroying them. Smith Rowe, Iwobi, what's the name of the other guy? Reece Nelson. And then Jimenez is starting to find his form. Like, he's now starting to play like the Jimenez from Wolves, playing really well, strong, finishing like the Jimenez we knew. And then Adama Traore is just Adama Traore. He's just going to run down the wing, bulldoze everyone out of the way. You know, Fulham are doing really well. They're doing really well. I like Smith Rowe's goal, like the link up play with Iwobi. I think Iwobi is so happy to have him around. I like Jimenez's goal, the half volley, beautiful goal. And the last goal, Smith Rowe, it was from pressing Newcastle. Like, Newcastle just messed up at the back. And then Harvey Barnes got another goal. That's an FPL gem. If you play FPL, this is a secret. Have Barnes cheap and will get you goals. Think about it. But Newcastle lost. Elsewhere, we have Southampton versus Ipswich. Southampton is... I know, I talked about how they need to adapt to the league. They need to change their style. And I still back that opinion. But, man, they are playing really well. They are just unlucky. So, so unlucky. They outplayed Ipswich. Based on what I saw, I didn't see the full game, but based on what I saw, the stats and everything, they outplayed Ipswich. We're unlucky not to have scored more. Archer. Archer is giving Gabriel Jesus vibes. He's doing everything right, but not scoring. Maybe when he starts scoring, it would continue to flow. But for now, he's playing really well anyway. That's all I'll say. I'll give it to him. He's playing really well. Dibling got his goal. Dibling likes dribbling. I wanted to make that joke. But game ended 1-1. Ipswich got a last minute equalizer. And after Ramsdale had a very good game. Like, I think this is Ramsdale's level. You know, games where he can fly and hit the ball, make saves that were not even necessary. You know, this is his level. But he had a good game regardless. But unfortunately, he conceded in the last minute. Mad volley, top corner. I mean, there was a deflection, yes, but good goal. And I think the last game to speak about will be Leicester versus Everton. Everton have finally gotten a point. When you watch them, they play really well for the first 60 minutes. And then something just takes over them. I don't get it. Like, you watch Ndiaye. Oh, my God. I'm standing him. There are certain clubs I hate when players go to, because I know Liverpool can't go there and get players from them. One of those clubs is Everton, because Liverpool and Everton will just never make a deal together, so it's impossible. But Ndiaye, that boy is good. He's very technical, like when he dribbles, like he's that type of technical dribbler, and he can make a very incisive pass. And well, as we saw this weekend, he can also shoot when he wants to. I really like him. He's going to, if Everton are not going to relegate, it's going to be down to Ndiaye. I don't trust Calvert-Lewin. Never trusting that guy. And Mark Neal too is going to be very important to them. Has always been important to them anyway. But yeah, Ndiaye got his goal, first goal, and then, well, Leicester decided to wake up. They started pressing and pressing and pressing. Every highlight I saw was a Leicester highlight until Mavadidi got his goal and the game ended 1-1. Let me see. Let me try and get the Premier League table up to see what it looks like. So far we have City on 13 points, Liverpool and Aston Villa on 12 points. Both have 4 wins and 1 loss. City still unbeaten. And then we have Arsenal, 3 wins and 2 draws. Unbeaten also. And then Chelsea is just there. Chelsea are actually are just 1 point behind Arsenal. I mean, it's 5 games, obviously. So, nothing to get excited about. Newcastle is actually up there. I just criticized them. Brighton and Forest also are the other unbeaten teams. You know, table is looking nice. I like where teams are. I like where United is. You know, 11th, where they deserve to be. Wolves have not won any game this season. 4 losses and 1 draw. Is that the relegation shout that I missed out on? Ipswich have 3 points now. 3 draws. Maybe that's how they survive. Just draw every game. It's looking good for them. Palace also have not won any game. 3 draws. Wow. Leicester too have not won any game. 3 draws. Wow. Season is very interesting, you know. But, yeah. That is it. That is it from me, guys. Well, hopefully your team wins next weekend. Unless you support United, and then I hope your team loses. And I will see you guys in the next video. Please like, comment, subscribe, share, turn on the notification bell. Drop your opinions, please. I like when people comment. I've seen people comment. Lots of people even asking me questions. Instead of replying in the comment section, I'll probably just start, you know, replying in the next videos. I got an interesting question. What players do you think some teams would really miss? Like, in terms of if this player goes out, the team will struggle. And I mentioned two people, Salah and Saka. I think if Salah goes out, not that Liverpool would be bad without Salah. We've seen Liverpool without Salah so many times. It's just our attacking output is solely based off of Salah, which is not good. If Salah isn't available, maybe we'll be able to adapt. But so far, I haven't seen anything to suggest that. So if Salah goes out, I think Liverpool struggle. If Saka goes out, I think Arsenal struggle. They don't really have good attackers, to be honest. They have Martinelli, who is struggling, hasn't scored in almost a year. Havertz, who you can trust with your life. If you trust him with your life, then you don't fancy your life. And then they have Saka, who is brilliant. So if Saka goes out, I think their attacking output will drop. And this season, Arsenal's attacking output has dropped massively. If they lose Saka on top of that, I think they'll struggle. But yeah, I like questions like that. And I'll start answering the questions in the following videos. Guys, like, comment, subscribe. See you in the next video. Peace.